If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello friends, and welcome finally to your latest edition of the Kings of Anglia Ipswich Town podcast, proudly sponsored by Stardust Spirits and Molecular UK. Friends, I am Mark Heath, and I start this week with some great news. There are no more international breaks until the end of March. We get to go through Christmas. We get to go through the transfer window in January. I get to go to Mexico before there's another international break. And Ross, of course, has promised he'll finally pass his driving test by the next time the international break happens. So that's something to look forward to as well, isn't it, friends? But before we get into what we're going to talk about today, and clearly there's a bit to talk about, we're going to take some mailbag, look ahead to Wrexham and look back on what's been happening. I thought we'd have a little catch-up because it's been a while since we all spoke. And I'm going to start with Alex Jones. AJ, hello. J'accuse you of phoning it in, taking time away, not really being fully committed, because you skipped the Swansea game, made Sune all the way to Swansea on his own, because it was your birthday. I know you were there as well, Ross, but Stu had to travel on his own. Yeah. And then the past weekend international break, you're meant to be our international correspondent, and you had a long weekend because it was your anniversary. You're not even married, mate. Yeah, so what have you got to say for yourself?
Thank you for the birthday and anniversary. Congratulations, Mark.
Whatever.
In terms of my response to those two things, for starters, yes, I didn't go to Swansea. I don't want to drag Stu into this, but you forced me to. Stu didn't go to Preston.
Well,
so that's my first point.
Stu's
my second point is that you say that I was not doing my international correspondence. However, you just spent the entire intro saying that international football's rubbish, and might I add, you spent the entire time before we started recording also saying international football's rubbish, and we had to convince you that we should talk about it on this podcast.
He's done me. I'm stitched up like a kipper. Guilty as charged, Your Honour. What did you do for your anniversary, AJ, just out of interest? Did you do something nice?
Back into London, pretty chill. Second weekend in a row in London. But Sophie and I are quite big fans of Ted Lasso. We think that's quite a good show. We enjoyed that. So we went to Richmond. And we went to the shop there and had a look around at some of the bits from the show and just potted around London, a little bit more chilled than the weekend before. It was nice. Yeah, it was really good.
Did you go to Richmond Park?
Yes. So Richmond Park is literally, when you turn off that side street down there, that is the little street with the pub, the Ted Lasso pub, which has some cool merchandise on it. You've got the little shop down there, and that is also the street that they live on in the show as well. So, yeah. It's a little bit weird when you go through and you look at it. I don't know if you guys have had this before, where you go somewhere and you're like, oh, I've seen this on the TV show. This is where X and X sat and spoke about this or did this from this show or this film. And that was a bit bizarre.
I once ran a race around Richmond Park. And as I recall, there were herds of deer on Richmond Park. Have I made that up? I definitely ran a race around Richmond Park anyway. It was a mother loving chore to get to, let me tell you. And Stu, you should never, ever watch Ted Lasso, because I think that kind of American saccharine approach to soccer would make your head explode. Anyway, AJ, before we move on,
what?
Yeah,
I've watched it.
Yeah,
and I like it.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Oh man, I thought the first season or so was all right, and then it just got to the point where I was like, this is complete rubbish.
I'm only one season in. I'm fairly new to it, but I like it. But
maybe does it get worse? Downhill fast.
Does it? Okay, all right.
Yeah, the final series is just complete horse shit, as the Americans would say, bull crap. I didn't expect to start here with Ted Lasso. The other thing I had to say to you, AJ, was I would say to you, you're 3 years into your relationship. Don't get tied down too early, because before long, you'll be like me, living in a house under the iron fist of your better half, being told to take the bins out and being told you've stacked the dishwasher incorrectly, mm-hmm. or that your greasy fingers make marks on the chrome light switches, that kind of stuff. So
very specific to you?
I'm just coming back. I'm just making these up.
Ross in the corner was nodding away just quietly.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, there is a man who's going through the same things you're saying there.
I just like to stress that I love my wife dearly and I wouldn't be without her. But I just wish I'd done more with this before I settled down.
I see.
Yep. Bit of a crime. Rossi, you are now trapped like me and Stu. How are you?
Very well. I won't speak too loudly because of obvious reasons. But looking forward to the real football, but there has been drama in international football. But yeah, got nothing else to add.
Excellent. And just finally on this little catch-up, we've already heard from him, breaking the news that has quite frankly shocked me about Ted Lasso. Stu, last night I thought about you while I was in bed. and do you know why? It was really cold in Casa Heath Towers. The butler had been given the day off, so he wasn't personally warming my feet. And I slept in pyjamas, which is not something I do normally. I'm very much a T-shirt and pants man. But my mind cast back to when you and Hutchie revealed that you sleep in the All Together, in the nip, in the buff, as nature intended. And I wonder if Stu's lying there naked in his bed right now. do you wear clothes when it starts to get chilly outside?
Wow, this is not the start of the pod I was expecting today. 365 whole just year round, as butt yeah, naked. Birthday suit as nature intended.
You must have some seriously high heating bills then in Watson Towers at this time of year.
No, you just get the duvet sort of right underneath you, like a little, I don't know, snug as a bug in a rug, and then you get the iron fist come across from the other side of the bed. Stop pulling the covers off. That's what you get.
I don't think we've actually asked you this question since you arrived, AJ. Do you sleep in the nip?
No.
Excellent. So me and AJ, non-nip. Stu, very much nip. Rossi?
Full bollock naked, my friend.
Wow, it's a straight split. Two with clothes, two without. And that's how I'd like to start this podcast today. Friends, before we get to the mailbag, obviously there's some things to talk about that have happened since we last spoke. I think the most interesting, although AJ would dispute this because he had to cover it, was the fan forum, where fans got to ask various questions of McKenna, Ashton, and also Ed Schwartz. Now, I know you said it was pretty dull, and I think the consensus was that there weren't enough silly questions asked of the trio. But from an interest point of view, I guess it was interesting. It's the first time we've heard from anyone involved in the ownership group since that £200 million investment story broke earlier this year. So do you want to just run us through kind of your takeaways from the fan forum, AJ? What you think people would be interested to hear?
Yeah, my first point I'm going to say is that if you want all the in-depth stuff, that's all online, but we'll go through and cover some of the main bits from this one. It was interesting to hear from Ed Schwartz. I'll be honest, as someone who's come in probably a little bit later to the Game Changer era, I'm still struggling to put names to faces a little bit. So it was good to be able to do that and hear from him. And I think the biggest question is, with all of these changes, is the ownership group still committed? And the answer is yes. The answer was, and I like this one, they're happier than they ever have been owning Ipswich Town. But the changes can happen, and naturally shareholders will dial down their shares, while others will want to dial up and invest a little bit more. So those changes are pretty natural, but it was all kind of reaffirmed with the support in the club, the support in Mark Ashton, a lot of love for Mark Ashton, to the point that there was a question about him, which went into a lot of praise for Mark Ashton, and Kieran McKenna turned around and said, are there any other cousins of Mark Ashton in the audience here to ask questions? I like, there's a lot about kind of, it's not linear progression. Yes, this club has gone up and up and up, and this is the first setback, but everyone expected that at the club, and there was naturally going to be bumps in the road. It wasn't always going to be a total incline the whole way up. So I think it's good when you hear owners talk in a way that you want them to, and in an understanding way. I don't want to make comparisons, but I've heard another American owner from another championship club speak recently, and it felt like the opposite to that. And hearing Ed Schwartz, who obviously has such a pivotal role, talk about it in such a logical sense was really good. The Nunez stuff was nice, wasn't it? We quite liked that when Mark Ashton was asked about the Marcelino Nunez deal and spoke about how he didn't expect that one to happen and wouldn't have sold back to Norwich if roles were reversed, with a potential deal for any of Ipswich's players. And then from there, it's the usual kind of stuff, isn't it? Infrastructure, stands. Schwartz confirmed that they'd be trying to back the squad and strengthen in January, which would be obviously important, and saying, yes, the simple answer is we have sufficient resources and wiggle room in FFP to do that. A bit on West End sponsorship, the Cobbold redevelopment, and Ashton talking about how it's going to be a huge stand, a massive stand, but it's not just going to be for football games and hosting 20 plus a season. It's also going to be a 365 day a year kind of open access thing for other projects that they're going to do, and they're hoping to show off some of those. So yeah, all in all, some good insight. Not as funny as previous years. I covered last year's one as well, and that was a bit more entertaining, but some really good insight into certain things, and especially with Ed Schwartz, good to hear from him.
Rossi, you were actually there because you were taken as a plus one by Ben Diath, who I've had a bit of a fallout with. Reasons will come with later on. What was it like actually being there? Because you sent us a picture to the group. They've got one of your pictures on the wall. Have they asked permission? I assume they paid a hefty fee.
That's at the training ground, actually. And yeah, still to be confirmed about the fee.
Massive. But, they've got a bit of dollar, so I'd really push that.
I'm sure. But no, apparently Kieran McKenna really liked it because it shows togetherness in the squad.
It's the picture of Azon getting mobbed by his teammates, basically, we should say that.
Yeah. And going with the subs as well, which is good. So I think that's outside the sauna room, or, you know, basically. So you've got town players, you know, probably naked like we do when we go to sleep, just walking past it going nice. So the fans forum, it was good to catch up good old Ben Diath. We had a nice little point watching the fans forum. We're in the back, that's where the cool kids are, of course. I was told I weren't allowed to ask a question, because, you know me, I would have just asked Mark Ashton favorite cheese or something like that.
You weren't allowed to ask? Were you shut down by the man?
Yeah, maybe, but I obviously, you know, I was being a good boy. But yeah, it was just nice sort of to go to an event, sort of catch up with a few town fans as well, and network and all that jazz. So, it was a good event. And just the boy Robson's suite now is unbelievable as well. Like, the setup they've got there is impressive. There's not much bingo fans forum we were playing with. It was many of that, as AJ said, I don't know, in previous, you know, fans forums, there's been some silly questions. No offense to those fans who did those questions, but they were a little bit silly, parking and all that jazz. Some good stuff from Mark Schwartz. Really big fan of him.
Ed Schwartz.
Yeah. Who's Mark Schwartz?
Huge fan of Mark Schwartz. Anyway. I don't know who Mark Schwartz is. Mark Spitz used to be a swimmer, big time Olympic swimmer back in the day, before your time. Also, Rossi, we should say, we should address this, because people will be watching this and wondering why your background is blurred. Just confirm there's nothing obscene behind you. It's just because it's a bit of a mess.
Well, I wouldn't, you know, admit if there was. No, it's just loads of just boxes and crap. And I just thought, instead of, you know, when we did a screenshot for the video, I don't want it to be too, you know, cluttered. I wouldn't say I've got OCD, but I do like to have some sort of, which is surprising for some people, but I like some organisation in terms of background and area. So I thought, I was going through the settings, went, oh, you can blur your screen. So I thought, or blur your background. So I thought, okay, I'm going to do that.
How is the great decorating job at Halls Towers going?
Well, that's a long story. It's all done.
Yeah.
Basically, I've had some problems with Tappy, the flooring carping company. We won't get into that.
No, don't.
Yeah, just in case. But it's going okay. But yeah, long story.
Okay, well, let's not tell that story. So you've been sitting patiently while we've been catching up with Rossi. Fan forum stuff, anything that kind of particularly caught your eye before we move on to something else?
No, it's good. Okay. That, it's good that the club are regularly transparent and have been, and that the ownership shows their faces and lets their voices be heard from time to time. So, no, I think Alex has covered all the main topics there. All good.
It is also a heartening reminder, isn't it? As Alex said, when you've heard the Norwich owner kind of admit they didn't even know what an own goal was, when you hear the town ownership, Edge Schwartz and people like that speak, and they clearly do understand football and the business of it.
Well, it's understanding understanding each of their roles within the business, and the ownership knowing that they're not there to make football decisions. And what really shines through to me is that I don't think you'd have Edge Schwartz or any of the other owners taking themselves into uncomfortable waters discussing certain areas of football that they're not necessarily well up on. That's not their job. That's the job of, to appoint Mark Ashton, but primarily Kieran McKenna and the coaching staff. And their job is to basically, as Ed Schwartz keeps saying, we speak multiple times a day, certainly around transfer windows. What do you need? We're here to provide what you need, and we trust in you to put the right things in place. So, understanding. And Mark Ashton has a phrase, stay in your lane, in terms of everyone within the business knowing their roles and not coming away from those too much. So that's the feel I get, really.
Okay, moving on then to something that, as AJ alluded to, I didn't really want to mention in this news roundup because I couldn't care less. International football, bin it, get it in the bin. World Cup, waste of time. AJ, but we had a couple of town players apparently doing something decent, so we should probably mention it. Do you want to tell everyone about it?
There have been so many awesome stories from around the world.
That's enough of that. Anyway, moving on.
With World Cup qualifying. And it's pretty cool that we have two countries with town players in. I can just see you there. Really enjoying this.
I'm checked out, mate. I'm looking out the window.
No. Let's talk Ireland, because we have the Republic of Town. Two of them didn't go. McAteer wasn't picked. Smodics was injured. So Chio went, obviously, on loan at Sheffield United with Dara O'Shea and Jack Taylor. And they had to essentially fight against all odds to even make the playoffs in the World Cup. And they had that first game against Portugal. If they lost and Hungary had won, that would have been it. Day one would have been over. Hungary did win, but Ireland managed to beat Portugal. Troy Parrott gets the brace, and Dara O'Shea plays quite a big part because he gets into a bit of a war with words with Ronaldo, I think at different times in this game, and it ends with Ronaldo at one point turning around and just elbowing him point blank in the head. And at this point, Ronaldo does the little crying gesture at him, not realising that the referee is going to go to VAR and have a look at it. And the referee decides actually it is violent conduct and he's going to get sent off. And that was the end of Ronaldo on that day. He went off to the White House instead. Ireland win that 2-0 and it sets up the big showdown on Sunday. That one would have been. They go to Hungary. They go 1-0 down. They equalise with Troy Parrott. They go 2-1 down. They need to win it to go and get that World Cup spot and knock Hungary out. Parrott scores again with 10 minutes from time. And then with the last kick of the game, Troy Parrott, who I'm sure you've spoken about so much in previous podcasts from his incredible spell at Portman Road, wraps it up, final kick of the game with his hat-trick goal in the 96th minute to get the playoff spot. They had about 20-odd% chance of making that playoff spot, and they did it. And that was really cool. So Dara O'Shea and Chio and Smodics, when he comes back, and all of those will have a chance of playing at the World Cup and joining George Hurst, which is really fun and really cool. George Hurst, I think, has played 9 minutes or something in World Cup qualifying, but Scotland needed to essentially turn the tables on Denmark. They lost their first game of this international break to Greece 3-2, but Denmark also got held by... who was it? Belarus, of course, the global football powerhouses. And then it came down to the big game at Hampden on the other night, whatever that would have been. McTominay, bicycle kick. Stu and I were talking about that a little bit earlier in the week. That was pretty special, I think, Stu. That was one hell of a goal. And then bit of drama. Two goals either way. 2-2, a red card, goes into stoppage time. Tierney scores it. Kenny McLean, who we don't want to talk about too much, but scored from basically the halfway line to win it in the 98th minute. Scotland go to the World Cup for the first time since 1998. As things stand, George Hurst goes to the World Cup in North America next year. And that's really cool. So one Ipswich player set for that. Some more who will be in the playoffs in March. Sindre Vollaregelli scored a couple of goals as well for Norway under 21s. And that's quite nice too.
Is that how you finished?
Yeah, I'm done.
Excellent. Okay. I was genuinely, I mean, as much as I have utter contempt for international football and especially the England national side, I was excited to see Scotland get through. I didn't watch any of it, but I identify as Scottish. I'd much rather be Scottish than English. So I'd be keen to see what they manage in the World Cup of soccer next year, which I won't watch any of. Stewie, you've actually spoken to Dara O'Shea since said incident, and that's going out tomorrow. Do you want to give us a little tantalising insight without giving too much away? But he was in good form, you said.
Yeah, the pleasure of sitting down with Dara on his first day back at Playford Road post, as Alex says, eventful international break. I think Dara and George will have celebrated at some point over this week, given the magnitude of their results. I asked him about the Ronaldo incident and Piers Morgan weighing in. Second time Piers Morgan's weighed in on an Ipswich Town player this calendar year. He had, if you remember, a little pop at Leif Davis after his red card against Arsenal, and then he came for Dara because of his mate Ronaldo. So Dara got a response from Dara on that, and then had a really good chat about why he decided to stay at Ipswich in the summer and sign the new contract, how he feels the season's going, got really into his captaincy, how he's finding his feet as captain. Few incidents along the way, the hour people team talk ahead of the derby, responding to that difficult night against Charlton, and being peacemaker when Philogene and Matasiwa had that little set to in the Watford game. So, the people can read that online over the next couple of days.
Yeah, first part goes out today. It'll be there'll be various bits going out. Something to look forward to, unlike obviously the World Cup. I can't wait till England fail at the World Cup, AJ. I really can't. It's going to be lovely because they are going to fail, let's be honest.
Are you associated with Scotland then? So if you had to pick a
100%, 100%. Whenever I watch rugby, and I don't want to start the rugby versus football debate, but whenever I watch rugby and they do the flower of Scotland before the Scottish rugby side, I want to be Scottish. I want to be groundskeeper Willie. I want to be
Are you
going to
like Braveheart? Yeah, exactly. Full kind of thing.
And okay. So, and obviously, I've spent quite a lot of time in Scotland, so I'm pleased they're there.
The one thing I would say, and this is probably almost leading into a mailbag question, the English national anthem. You want something that riles you up, like Flower of Scotland, like Wales' national anthem. Mm. Get that? Yeah, not for me.
Okay, excellent, Rossi. The final bit of our news roundup concerns your friend Sam Morsey, who you spoke to ahead of the derby, got a prediction, which he was correct with, that Town would finally beat Norwich. He's back in the country. He's apparently training with Wolves under 21 side, his boyhood club. And AJ wrote what I thought was an excellent piece last week. If you haven't read it, go back and read it, about the obvious debate as to whether or not Town should try and re-sign him in January. He can't sign for another club until January. Must say, it's still not been 100% confirmed that he's actually left Kuwait, but he certainly seems to be back in this country. So where do you stand on that? Because there are clearly fours and against on that. If you had the choice, and we know that there is currently no obvious backup, I'm not saying he would necessarily be a backup, but no other player like Azor Matasiwa in the Town squad, which Morsey would certainly be. If you had the choice, would you try and re-sign him? Would you bring him home?
I don't know. No, to be honest, I love Sam Morsey, you know, as a player, as a bloke, you know, he's, you know, we've always had good conversations, but I just feel like we've gone away from that now. I wouldn't say bridges have been burned, but I'm sure that, you know, there was conversations and some with the club and he was disappointed potentially with stuff. So I think going back to that, I think no. Because, yeah, at the end of the day, it would only be like a six-month deal or something until the end of the season, and maybe Sam will want a longer-term deal somewhere else, and he could potentially get that, you know, somewhere. So, no, yeah, it would be a lovely sort of sentimental thing, like, oh, yeah, get Morsy back, and he can be part of the team to hopefully get us back to, you know, promotion, and he can be... Because, like, Dario Shea's the captain, but Morsy's coming back, and I'm like, well, I was the captain before, I'd say, I don't know. I don't know if... I'm sure... Most players will open arms, but obviously it's a new dressing room now. There's a lot of new signings. But for me, no, I just don't think it's needed. But yeah, good player.
Very good player. AJ, we'll let people read your bit. So I'm gonna ask Stu. I think people will be interested about what Stu thinks. Would you bring him back if the opportunity was there, Stu?
I think it all depends on circumstances leading into January. There's a scenario where people can get injured, that situations change, that I would say I might change my mind on it, but right here and now, no, I'm not sure it's appropriate for all parties. And that's not a slight on Sam. It absolutely was, you know, clearly the beating heart of the back-to-back promotion teams. I would say was in Ipswich's top three performers in the Premier League last season. And Ipswich is, as much as they're stacked in various areas of the squad, as you say, that kind of holding midfield area, as shown by the Charlton game when Matisse was suspended, there's no one else quite like him in the squad. It would have to be a short-term contract, I think, as Ross says. He's 34, he'd be 35 in September next year, going into the start of a new season. Life moves on and you have to keep thinking several steps ahead. Would a short-term contract appeal to Sam at this moment in time? I don't think so. Will there be other Championship clubs offering him something a bit longer? Probably. And then Ipswich need to think about, you know, you're trying to create a new group here, a new culture, a new leadership group. Dar O'Shea, and you'll see this in the piece that I've done with Dar, is still trying to find his voice, his style as a captain. I'm not sure that's necessarily helpful or fair to him to have Sam come back. I think I'm not sure Sam would feel particularly, and I'm talking on behalf of people, I might be wrong here, but I'm not sure. Sam is a very intense character. He's all or nothing. And I think he's either starts pretty much week in, week out, and is the captain and is the driving force of things. I'm not sure it would sit comfortably with him being a kind of rotation bit part, in and out, vice captain, that sort of scenario. I'm not sure that suits him. So, no, in answer to your question, I can't see it happening at this given juncture. I do think Ipswich need another midfielder. I'm not sure Sam Morsy will be that player, but we'll see. And we don't know how sharp he is as well. He's, you know, he's been out in Kuwait, which is not the level of football. He's now not playing for a little while. What you know, I'm sure he has kept himself in tip-top condition, but nothing replicates games as well. So you have to take that into account.
Okay, just apologies there. I muted myself. Benson's throwing a fit downstairs. If that is coming through on the audio, I do apologise because I know how annoying that is. Having a barking dog all over the audio. Right then, news roundup done. As I say, if you want to read AJ's considered thoughts on Morsy, that's there to go back and read and consume. Let's do some mailbag, shall we, friends? It's always is an enjoyable part of the show. Mailbag. It's time for Ross, Alex, Stu and me to dip into the mailbag.
Do, do.
Yes, you remembered, Rossi. Good boy. Right then, at some point, we're going to have to address the elephant in the room, which is why I've fallen out with Ben Diaz. Let's start with a football question to get us rolling. And let's start with something from Instagram. Alex William, 1993, wants to know, AJ, and I'm going to ask you this because you make lists of targets and profiles and XG and all this kind of stuff. Which striker and right back are we bringing in January? Surely another right back.
Yeah, so my answer that's first going to go on this, no right backs, they have four. I don't want any more right backs. Striker's an interesting one. I'm going to keep coming back to the same player that I just want, basically. And I think I've mentioned him in at least two transfer target pieces. The answer is Will Asula from Newcastle.
Ah.
He is the answer. He's the one. He is, how old is he? 22. He's 6'4". He's not really played. I think he's got a bit of a knock at the moment that's going to keep him out for a couple more weeks. Voltamada is scoring goals a little bit for Newcastle. They're going to have Wissa coming back. Go and sign him. He is big. He is tall. We like Newcastle. They're good friends with Ipswich, aren't they? So let's try and do that. That would be the absolute number one for me. No right backs, please. I'm not going to name any names because I can't think off the top of my head, but the other areas would be midfield, as Stu has said, and possibly something around the right wing, versatile 10 Amari style player as well.
I assume Alex is being a bit facetious there with the suggestion that we need another right back, but striker certainly within.
Or he's maybe meant to say right wing. I don't know.
I have seen right back mentioned quite a lot, and that does surprise me. I can only come to the conclusion that people aren't 100% sold on Darnell Furlong, but they have just signed him for £3.5 million, and I don't think he's been fine so far. I think he is what he is. He's a pretty sort of solid championship performer and has proven that over his career. Behind that, you've then got Ashley Young, Ben Johnson, who's kind of the backup left back at the moment. Harry Clark, we'll see what happens with him. Seems on the fringes. I can see why people might not think that's one of the strongest areas of the team, but it certainly shouldn't be anywhere high up on the priorities and things that need to happen going into January. Lest we not forget, they're maxed out in terms of numbers. They've got the full 25-man complement of senior players. So any ones they want to bring in above a certain age, people have to make room as well. So, right back, not for me. As a midfield is that sort of, I'm concerned that Azor Matasiwa, if you look at his career stats, he's rarely played much more than around the sort of 20-game mark, and he's had a few injury setbacks in the past. He's now come to a lot more intense division that he's ever played in before, admits that himself. As I say, that Charlton game when he dipped out, that I think really missed him that day. So they need something else there to make sure they don't get caught short again, because another suspension will come down the track for Azor. Hopefully not an injury, but it's a possibility. I think they need to be really careful there. And then top end of the pitch as it stands at the moment, loads of options. But as we know, McKenna likes to have a proper attacking arsenal, an armoury at his disposal, doesn't he? Striker is the one people have been talking for a while. I guess it will all depend on Hurst and Azon in terms of fitness and form. Akpom can play up top as well. In terms of quantity, that's enough. In terms of quality, is that enough to get a promotion push over the line? I guess that's up in the air and that's up for debate at the moment. And that's something Ipswich will have to kind of assess in a few weeks' time.
Can I throw a curveball in? My one other striker shout. I think he's going to have a lot of interest, but Ipswich got over the line in their last promotion season by bringing back a former loan player who didn't really do that much in his loan spell to fire them across the line. Could they splash the cash on Troy Parrott, given his form in the Netherlands and the Republic of Ireland? I don't think so, but I'd love it.
I mean, I was staggered to see that Troy Parrott scored a hat-trick, I'll be honest, because he wasn't great.
Five goals in those two games.
At Town. I vaguely remember he was most notable for being mates with James Norwood, I seem to recall, and some various sort of dances or stuff they used to do. Anyway, Stu, I'm going to come to you now. Our Warsaw correspondent, Peter McLeod, wants to know, and I haven't seen either of these, who scored the better overhead kick, McTominay or Pele? Now, he's asking this off the back of a bit of content you've done around Escape to Victory. Hence, I'm asking you. You've had a chat with someone who's written a book about Escape to Victory and told a few tales from behind the scenes, which I've not heard before. BT versus Sly in an arm wrestle, for example. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? And also, who scored the better overhead kick?
Well, McTominay's was something special. I saw that live the other night on TV. The height he gets on it is unbelievable, isn't it? Brilliant technique. The Pele one. I need to go back and watch. I can't remember the last time I watched Escape to Victory, if I'm honest. But Pele obviously scores the winner with an iconic overhead kick. And yes, well, thank you, Peter, for that question, because it tees up a bit of a chance for us to plug some content. I've spoken to John Smith, author of a new book. I've got it here, actually. Escape, a love letter to a cult football classic. It's obviously Escape to Victory. Amazing, really, when you look back, isn't it? 1980, the summer of 1980, they decide to film a football film based around Pele's gone to New York Cosmos in the States, become a bit of a star at the end of his career, an aging Brazilian icon. They go, we're going to make a football film around sort of Allied prisoners that play a football match against the German prison guards, and we're going to get a bunch of current footballers involved. One of the producers knew Bobby Robson. He says, come into Ipswich. Who fancies it, lads? Seven of them put their hands up, and off they go to Hungary, film a Hollywood movie, go on to win the UEFA Cup a few months later, and then the movie is released just off the back of that. Loads of tales from it. I'm sure you've all watched it. I'm sure it'll be on your Christmas watch list when it's on TV. And some great tales from that as well. So I've done a video podcast interview with John, some written stuff as well, so check it out.
Controversial opinion. It is rubbish, that film. I mean, by all means, I know a lot of people love it because it's got the Ipswich Town thing. It's not a good film. Moving on.
Sports films and football films are hard, aren't they?
Yeah.
They are really hard because whatever you do, it will always seem a bit fake, cheesy, a bit far-fetched. Yeah. Even though, look, for example, one of the tales from this is how originally the script had Stallone's character, the goalkeeper, scoring the winner. He was going to, not just at a corner either, he was going to dribble the ball through the entire team. I think shoot against the crossbar, comes back to Michael Caine's character, the captain, supposedly a former West Ham player in the film. He toes it to Hatch, Stallone's character, who scores. And the footballers, the Ipswich footballers, sort of went, no, that's not believable. And they obviously changed it, and Stallone gets the penalty save and Pele gets the overhead kick winner.
Has there ever been a good football film? Like a believable, authentic football film? There's been nonsense like The Mean Machine, hasn't there? And stuff like, and what's his name? England manager. But
yes, Mike Bassett, England manager. That's still.
Been like an authentic, kind of edgy, genuinely believable football film, has there, that I can think of anyway?
No, they did that. Do you remember they did that Goal franchise around the guy who played for Newcastle? I don't think I've ever watched any of those, but I think they got pretty panned. No, they're difficult to do because like the action sequences and stuff like that are never gonna look great. But I like Escape to Victory. I think as football films go, I haven't watched it for a while, so I don't know how well it's aged. Maybe it's the Ipswich Town involvement as well, but. Yeah, I mean, you'd never get it again. You'd never get it again. That, can you imagine doing an equivalent now? So your equivalent of Pele now would be like Cristiano Ronaldo being in it, 40-something towards the end of his career, or Messi maybe. Who would Stallone and Kane be in sort of current parlance?
Stallone would probably be The Rock now.
Yeah.
Michael Caine, I guess. Someone like Tom Hardy,
Danny Dyer,
yeah, he would definitely be involved, wouldn't he? But then you just wouldn't get six or seven players from, you know, the equivalent of Ipswich now is would be a Man City, Chelsea, United, whoever, wouldn't it? You wouldn't suddenly them going, yeah, that's all right, lads, off you go, spend your summer running around on a dusty football pitch in Hungary with some army boots on and potentially coming back injured. Just wouldn't, as John said in our chat, you just wouldn't get it insured, would you? No chance.
And also, when you think about that as a concept, it just sounds awful, doesn't it? It would be terrible. I'm sure lots of people would watch it, but it would be awful. And of course, in real life, all but four of those escapees were rounded up and executed by the Nazis. So that's why there was no sequel. Anyway, moving on. Amber Redmond wants to know, Ross, what unusual food combination do you enjoy?
Ooh, I don't think I've got one. I think I'm that boring, maybe, with my food. I think I just keep it, you know.
Have you ever tried, which I remember trying when we had a former sponsor, whose name I shall not mention because he's not paid us, to mention now. He did pay us at the time, I'll just stress. is pickles with peanut butter. It, honestly, it sounds like it would be horrendous, but it really works. It's really good. Sorry, Stu, I cut over you then. You had one to throw into the mix.
Brussels sprouts and vinegar. Put a little bit of vinegar on your Brussels sprouts.
Nice. Brussels sprouts generally, I think, are underrated. I had, speaking of vinegar, I had vinegar ice cream the other day at one of these fancy restaurants I frequent, Chardonnay vinegar, and it was very good because it was designed in a dessert where the various bits complemented each other. On its own, it was like eating vinegar. But then with the other bits, it went really well. Anyway, anything from you, AJ? Any unusual food combinations? It's not unusual, but I really like chocolate and ready salted crisps as well.
Okay, fair enough. My grandma, I'm sure, will listen to this because she listens to all the podcasts that we do.
Does she really?
She does. She would end up walking around the house doing work, and I'll hear Ross's voice in the background. It'll be one of his like opposition previews or something like that.
So, I should probably apologise, Granny Jones, for the use of language thus far in this show.
Yeah, fair enough. She comes up with all sorts of fusion things, and one of them, which I believe is an actual thing that like people quite popularly, lasagna and baked beans is a thing that we go for sometimes in this house. It's not really my cup of tea, but yeah, that's the one.
That sounds like classic comfort food to me, lasagna and baked beans. Yeah, the other one, which I think is now fairly standard, but I enjoy greatly, is pancakes with maple syrup and bacon, smoked bacon. Is a delicious flavour combination. I don't know if it's unusual anymore, but it's certainly excellent. Right then, let's do a football one. Harvey Davis. AJ, Ashton said in an interview a few weeks back that not gaining promotion this season doesn't necessarily mean a failed season. So I'm after a yes or no answer, gents. If we don't go up this season as expected, will Ashton / ownership pull the trigger? I assume he there means sacking our Lord and Saviour, Kieran McKenna. And I should also obviously give Harvey Davis his due mention as friend of the show and the sweetest of Welsh princes. What say you, AJ? He's after a yes or no answer.
I want to take both parts of this question. The first part is it a failure if Ipswich don't go up? Yes. Should the ownership pull the trigger because of that? No. So I've essentially conflicted those two there. The main thought is that failing in a manager in one season doesn't make you a bad manager. This idea that one minute you're great and one minute you're rubbish is a little bit weird. I don't like it. It's the nature of football and how reactionary we can all be. But if Kieran McKenna doesn't get Ipswich promoted, that doesn't mean he's a rubbish manager. That doesn't mean he's the right person for it. Would it be a failed season? Absolutely. But every manager has a failed season. Pep had a rubbish one the other year. Klopp had plenty of them. You can go through and look at all sorts of the best managers. They have these years. They have times where it doesn't work. And we don't look at them as rubbish managers. And if Kieran was not to manage it this season and to take Ipswich back up, yes, it would be a failed season, but that's not a sacking offence in my mind.
Okay, fair enough. Very quick question.
Would it not depend on the manner in which they didn't go up? It's quite a black and white question. But they didn't make the top six. Catastrophic failure, given the resources and everything. But if they were to finish third and lose in the last minute in a playoff final, different conversation and a sense that actually they've grown and they've got better and we've seen progress as the season's gone on and they've just missed out. But a sense that, you know, they're moving into the new training ground next year and they'll go again. I think that's a different story if we're talking about sort of failure. So it would depend on how they missed out, I would say.
You're injecting nuance there, Stu, as is your want as a seasoned and respected and logical football journalist. Harvey was just after yes or no. So there we go.
Can I then add in that, so if Ipswich finished seventh or eighth, his question is, would do you think the ownership would pull the trigger? If Ipswich finished eighth, do you think the ownership would
If Ipswich Town finished eighth this season, I think Kieran McKenna would rightly be under pressure and under the spotlight. I don't think they'll finish eighth.
Fair enough.
Okay, I think we've got in there in the end. Let's move on to another question of similar status. Craig Henry, out of the KOA army, who would make the best Santa? I think that is obviously Ross. And you actually, as you lean back then, Ross, you blurred into your own background, like the Predator. There we go. Look, like the Predator, exactly like the Predator, which probably none of you have watched. But it's an excellent Schwarzenegger film back in the day. Let's do another football one. Ah, this is a good question. Chris Peachy, I'm going to start with you, Rossi, because you've seen a lot of games of football. I don't know how many you've seen as a neutral, though, because the Peachmeister wants to know, what is the best game of football you've seen live as a neutral?
Just realised my mic was muted. Rookie amateur hour from Roscoe there. But yeah, I did see this question earlier, and I was trying to look back because I've gone to a lot of football games, but as an Ipswich Town supporter, I've gone to a few Napoli games, but then technically they're boys as well, so I can't count them as a neutral. But I have gone to the San Siro to watch AC Milan, and I was quickly going back because I went with my cousin, and it was in the 2016-17 season.
Yeah.
When they were pretty crap, to be fair. That's why we got be able to get tickets. But yeah, they won 3-0 against Bologna. And my only memory of that game is that Honda scored. Where is he from?
Japanese,
that's the one. He scored in the game, and I just remember I loved him as a player. I used to always play him on FIFA. So to watch him live, I was just remembered, you know, because I was, I think, 20. Yeah, going to be 20, like, that summer. But yeah, just I wanted to go to San Siro because I never went, you know, when Town went there to play Inter Milan in 2001 because I was, you know, 5. So, you know, I wasn't going to be allowed to go. So yeah, I wanted to go to San Siro, and that's when I went. And that was just a good game because Milan won 3-0. I was able to see Honda play. And yeah, I'm just trying to think back because, as I said, I go to a lot of Ipswich games as an Ipswich fan mainly. So there's not many games as a neutral I've been to.
You're giving your answer now. I'm hesitant to ask AJ this because we're already at 46 minutes. And I fear if I ask him, we might be soon an hour and 46 minutes. Stu, how about you?
Like Ross, I can't remember many. I can't remember the last time I've been to a game where I had no skin in it as a full-on neutral. If we're discounting Ipswich, because there's obviously a slight partisan element of them being the team that we cover all the time, even though they're not my proper team, inverted commas. Then you're going back to watching Everton growing up. I can't give you an answer. I'm struggling to think of a time I just took myself off and watched two random teams.
AJ, in less than a minute, what's your answer?
If we're going for a purely neutral view on this, when I was at uni, I took myself up on a train to Newcastle for a 12:30 kickoff. They played Manchester City. It was a 2-2 draw. Kevin De Bruyne scored a screamer. Jonjo Shelvey equalised in the 88th minute, also with a long shot. It was really good. This was at the time when Newcastle were crap. That's why Jonjo Shelvey was playing. And City were pretty good, and it was a brilliant game. And that is probably the only one where I can think of where I had no affiliation at all to either team supporting or covering.
I'll take you back to a young Heath, the age of 10, at the baseball ground, more sand than grass back in those days. I was flirting at that time, being a child and obsessed with supporting teams who were doing well. I was flirting with being a Liverpool fan, and my granddad took me to watch Derby against Chelsea at the old baseball ground. Derby were 3-1 up at half time, and they lost 6-4. And it was an extraordinary game of football that day. And that kind of made me become a Derby fan, even though they lost. It was such an exciting game. And Dean Saunders scored twice, and he was my first football hero, along with Peter Shilton. So that would be my question. I guess technically I was sort of a neutral back then. It's a great game. Right then, let's do, where are we? Steve Clark wants to know two questions, greedy Steve. Footy, Casey McAteer seems to get a lot of criticism on social media. Do the Kings think this is fair, or is he being harshly judged based on his price tag? AJ.
both. I think that criticism is fair when it doesn't go into anything more than that. And he hasn't performed, let's be honest. He's not played at the level that we'd want. And yes, the price tag comes into that, but the price tag naturally is going to come into that because he's a player that they paid £12 million for. And I think they probably expected more from, to be honest, given the fact that you know, he was given opportunities and then got to a point where he wasn't even picked to come on in games. I will always caveat it with things can change so quickly. All it would take would be a couple of good performances, a couple of goals, and everything could change. Look at Jack Taylor, where he's faced so much criticism, and all of a sudden he's had a couple of good games, and everyone's like, well, we can't be dropping him. He's one of the first names on the team sheet. So that can change quite quickly.
A few months ago, Jaden Philogene was seen as a £20 million transfer wing flop, wasn't he? And now look what he's
Jack
doing.
Clark, so, in the same boat as well. So, yeah, these things can change quickly. Players aren't immune to criticism by any means. And, you know, I try and have to do that in my player ratings as well when I talk about these things. But things can change very, very quickly. And I wouldn't rule out at all that happening with Casey McAteer.
And the second part I'm going to ask to Ross, because I saw you pose this very same question on one of your trips recently, Ross. Steve says, have any Kings got Christmas decorations up yet? When is it acceptable to put up in November? What is acceptable to put up in November? Now, I've noticed this more this year, walking around the houses near me. A lot of houses have already got... Where's Ross gone? What the hell? Excellent. Ross has just taken himself out of the chat. Did you get excited, Ross? I was asking you a question. You just removed yourself.
No, my internet went off.
Okay. Classic Ross, if you don't mind me saying. I was saying that a lot of houses around me now have got their decorations up already, like Christmas trees in the window, snowmen in the front garden, lights up all over the gaff, which I think is an absolute disgrace. And I can only think it's further evidence of the creeping Americanization of this country, where in America, Christmas starts basically after Thanksgiving. So, Ross, is it acceptable to have Christmas decorations up now? I mean, I will say at this point, of course, do what makes you happy, friends. I don't care. If it makes you happy to have Christmas, do it. But it's not for me. What are you saying, Ross?
I agree. Disgrace. My hotel in Swansea, the Mercure, I was having a go at the receptionist. I went, what are you doing?
You had a go at the receptionist?
I made a comment, a passing comment to her.
Right.
When I was checking in, because I didn't see it when I first came in, and then when obviously she was looking at my DL, I looked around and was like, "What the actual F is this?" It's like a massive tree and a sleigh, and there was like a grotto as well. And I'm like, "This is obviously before the international break. This is obviously Swansea game. This is like start of November." And I'm like, "Surely not." So yeah, no, 1st of December, do not mind, but in November, ladies and gentlemen. But do what you want to do. You know, if that's what you like to do, then do it. But not for me.
I think that would be very much the message from this podcast: is do what makes you happy. But if what makes you happy is putting your Christmas decorations up now and then having Yorkshire pudding with your Christmas dinner, then
all right. Well, let's not start there.
I'm not going to start. Stu, you've got a young child. The magic of Christmas, I could imagine. One of the only reasons I could think of justifying having a child is for Christmas. What point does the pressure start to put Christmas decorations up? Is she already wanting the tree up?
We've talked about doing it this weekend, actually. I have noticed. You're right. I have noticed there suddenly seems to be this narrative of, as soon as bonfire night is out of the way, it's all guns blazing for Christmas. We went to London. My missus said last weekend, international break, can we go into London? I want to get myself feeling a bit more Christmassy. So we've got a babysitter. Two of us went off into London to do Oxford Street, Regent Street, see the lights, all of that. And there was a very British interaction where a couple of young girls were walking down the very busy street with a loudspeaker singing at the top of their lungs the Mariah Carey All I Want for Christmas.
Too early.
And one bloke just turned around and just said, it's effing November. And that gave me a real sense of warmth, a real sense of patriotism.
Patriotism.
You know. Is that a word? Patriotism. Yeah,
absolutely. It is,
Felt very British then. But excellent. In answer to your question, we might go this weekend.
Wow, that is early. AJ, obviously you're not in control of what happens in your house because
no.
you only live in one room. But I can imagine, if history is anything to go by, Tat will soon start appearing in Casa del Jones.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. To be perfectly honest, I don't think it's going to happen until December. One of the other problems being that, as I revealed before, my mum has a broken ankle, and she's the one who goes up into the loft to get things because she knows where things are. Now, that's going to be my task probably at some point, but it's such a mess up there. Will I be able to find anything? I don't know. We'll find out. So, I would be I think we are a December family. I think that going the end of November, like Stu's going to do, is fine. I think that's all right. Mm. I'm also fully on the do what you want train. I also think that we mentioned, like, why do people go from, oh, it's like Halloween into bonfire night into Christmas? It's because sometimes life is rubbish, you know, and you look out at society and the world's just burning, isn't it? So, God, give us something to be cheerful and happy about, please.
I genuinely do think there is something in that, basically we're in such a state now, and Christmas is like the one time of the year that not all, obviously, there are some people who actually hate Christmas, but for most people, people like that kind of Christmas feeling, don't they? So I reckon there's probably something in that. I am certainly noticing, though, the kind of creeping forward of Christmas this year. Let's take a few more questions, and then we've got to talk about Wrexham. This is a good question for you, Stu. Hannah Derbyshire wants to know, if you're in charge of celebrity traitors, who would you choose to go on the show and why? We're not going to do a whole cast list because I'll be here all night, but is there anyone particularly you'd like to see in charge of or on celebrity traitors? I have one straight off the bat who I think would be excellent, and that would be Louis Theroux.
Go on.
Louis Theroux. I think he'd be superb.
Louis Theroux. I'd like to see Bob Mortimer on there.
Oh, he would possibly be the greatest contestant of all time. He's already the best game show contestant of all time. If you've ever seen him on Would I Lie to You, he could have his own show, just telling stories from that. Rossi, anyone? Oh, you don't like traitors. I'm not going to ask you. AJ, who would you like to see on Celebrity Traitors?
Roy Keane. Balance out. You've gone with a very different... You've both gone different ways. So, yeah, I'd go Roy Keane. And I'll throw in, because I think he was offered it and turned it down, and now he really wants to do it, so I think he'll do it. We've mentioned him already. Danny Dyer, I think, will be good as well. So I think there's a good chance he'll be on the next series of it. Those are my two.
I would say that Danny Dyer has had, in terms of career arc, he's had a similar kind of career redemption arc, akin to, like, Cameron Burgess at Town. Because sort of 25 years ago, he was just some kind of Cockney caricature, wasn't he? And now I genuinely feel like he's a bit of a national treasure, Danny Dyer. I absolutely love the guy. I would love to see him on Traitors. I think Roy Keane, Danny Dyer, Louis Theroux and Bob Mortimer as part of the cast would be exceptional. And Ross, one day you'll discover Traitors. And I'm kind of jealous because you've got all those great series to watch. Some of the best TV you'll ever see. Rodney Marshall wants to know, Stu, you wrote something around this, but let's go around the room. 7 games in the next 3 weeks. What constitutes a decent return of points? He says 15 out of 21. I would happily accept. I mean, that's quite ambitious. Stu, you did your predictions for the next 7 games. 7 games in 22 days. Real busy period, important period for Town. What would you say would be a decent return?
Do you want me to run you through those games quickly just to remind people? We've got Wrexham at home on Saturday, then the 3 away games in a row, which I've just got here. Hull on the Tuesday night, Oxford on the Friday night, then Blackburn on the Tuesday night. Then we've got home games against Coventry, midweek against Stoke, and then away to Leicester. So that's the 7 games in 22 days. What did Rodney say there? He wanted 15 points. He said he'd happily take that, as if that was happily suggest that that sort of... That'd be okay. I'll take that. I would snap your hand off, Rodney, for 15 points. 2 points a game on average is very much automatic promotion form. What's that, 46? That'd be 89. What's that, 92 points? That would get you at the end of the season. That puts you right up in the top two race. I think this year that sort of total would be more than enough for top two. So 2 points a game, which is what they've been doing since the transfer window closed. So that would be 14 points from the 7 games would be great. And I think I put 12, I think, in my predictions piece, which falls just below that. But I think that would be more than acceptable as well. What do you boys reckon?
I'd say go and read, first of all, your piece, Stu, obviously. Cole Fuller wrote an interesting piece this week about how the teams that are in seventh position at this stage of the season, how they fare. And it doesn't make for the best reading. I think only one has actually gone on to get promoted. And some of them have gone all the way down to sort of 21st in the table. And Cole, having run the numbers, said that you have to, if you can maintain a 1.6 point per game average, that's good stuff, but very few of them have been able to do that. But the ones that have managed to get at least into the top six. So history is against Town in terms of their position at the moment. And we're going to move on just because we're running out of time. We've still got to speak about Wrexham. Let's do a question off Instagram. Selfie Chef, who I believe is actually a chef. I'm going to ask you this, Ross. If you could have dinner with one ITFC player, past or present, who would it be and what would you eat?
Because it's this time of year, it'll be a roast. Just good old roast.
What sort of roast?
Beef.
Yeah. Beef, yeah, the classic, the classic, best. Classic
beef. Yorkshire pudding.
Yeah.
Ex-player. You want stories, don't you? I like Fabian Wilderness. I've had the pleasure of interviewing him a few times, and he's just a lovely man. So just chat with him. Easy one, really.
Selfie is a chef. I've just checked this at the Three Horseshoes in Fordham. So he is qualified to ask this question. Stu, you've spent many years. I mean, if we added up the hours interviewing players that you've interviewed over the years, is there anyone particularly over that period that you've thought, I'd like to sit down and have a nice steak dinner with you?
Let me have a think. Can we bring back dear old B in this scenario? Can I go for a nice, I don't know, we're going to go for ham, egg and chips, a nice wholesome meal, nice. Me and the B. And I just want to hear his positivity around Ipswich. He was always someone that made me feel better. You'd ring him up, even when things were not going good for the club. His prediction, they'd always win. Don't worry, everything's going to be okay. Too true, pal.
Yeah.
The beat. Bless him.
The beat would be a tremendous dinner companion. AJ, any particular player you'd like to take out for dinner?
I want to make sure David Button's okay. Are you okay, David? You've not played. You didn't even get your photo in the box. Is everything going all right? That would be one. I'd love a bit of paella with Ivan Azon. That would be good.
Oh, yes. He sounds like an interesting character, obviously, so you've spoken to him, not your average footballer. Right then, I'm going to stick with you, AJ. Chris Bennett wants to know, who's winning the World Cup next summer, and will it be George Hurst that scores the winner for them? Very quickly.
It'll be a Scotland-Ireland final, and George Hurst will score the winner. No, on real, I think it will be Portugal.
Portugal, that'd be interesting.
Cape Verde.
Oh, yes.
Not how you pronounce it, according to Ross.
Verde.
Although I actually spoke to Sasha's dad, and apparently in English it is Cape Verde, but in Portugal it's Cape Verde or Cabo Verde.
Cabo Verde, indeed. Right, one more football question, then we're going to finish with two kind of slightly silly questions, and then we're going to move on to Wrexham because we're already over an hour. James McCullum has asked a question that's very long, but I think it's worth reflecting on. It says, given how well the newly promoted teams in the Premier League are doing this season, could you argue that if Town had a similar favourable run of games at the start of last season, we would have survived? And obviously, Town had a murderous row to begin last season. And James has added that the runs for the newly promoted teams this season. So Sunderland had West Ham, Burnley, Brentford. Burnley had Spurs, Sunderland, Man United. And Leeds had Everton, Arsenal, Newcastle. Obviously, Town had Liverpool, Man City and Fulham. Stu, do you reckon if they had a slightly easier first couple of games, first three games, that they've been in more of a shout?
Yeah, I couldn't say hand on heart they would definitely stayed up, but more of a shout, absolutely. It's something that we've discussed a lot when we've been seeing the Sunderland results coming in. And I look back, I think if Ipswich had produced that performance that they did against Liverpool on the opening day, certainly for that first hour, I think they would have beaten most kind of mid to bottom half sides in the Premier League with that performance, with that adrenaline, with the crowd and everything. And then you just don't know in football with momentum, with vibes, with
all these intangibles, what could have happened? What could have flowed from there? That it's easy to forget how good some of those early performances were in the first half of the season. And maybe if the fixtures had fallen slightly differently, who knows? We'll never know. But certainly could have changed the course of history for sure.
One of life's great imponderables. We'll never know. I did forget this question, which I alluded to earlier. My now sort of Tupac/Biggie beef with Ben Diath. Sent a question to Ross. Goes as thus. Follows my question to McKenna at the Fans Forum, and there's an article on the BBC Sport website about the decline of the open play goal. This is where it really sticks in my craw. Do Stu, AJ and yourself, note Heath excluded, agree with my thoughts that football may have an issue if it doesn't clamp down on the bittiness of games, the stop-start nature and over-reliance on set pieces, long throws, etc.? K-Mac mentioned ball in play time is a record low. Football's entertainment needs to sort this out. You need to sort yourself out, Ben Diath. Check yourself. But I will ask this question because I do still have a smidgen of respect for you. AJ, do you agree?
Yeah, but football goes in cycles. You know, we all saw everyone jumped on the Pep Guardiola wagon of exciting attacking play, and then it was inverted fullbacks and all of those kind of things. And then Arteta came along and decided, no, I think we should all play terrible football, and I should line up a row of defenders with four centre-backs and it will just be ugly. And then you have Brentford being successful. And in a few months or a few years' time, a team will come along and they'll play open, expansive football and they'll go and win something and will be successful. And then it will just become a trend and other teams will jump on that and we'll go round into a cycle. And in a few more years, it's going to be long throws again. It all just comes and goes. I wouldn't worry about it too much, but the product as it is at the moment isn't as entertaining, that's for sure. And I blame Mikel Arteta.
There we go. I know, Ben, you don't care about my opinion, but I would certainly agree with the fact that football and sport as a whole is entertainment. It needs to be entertaining. It's a distraction from the grim realities of everyday life. So anything we can do to make it more entertaining, I would certainly agree with, although probably not kind of American style stuff. Although I do like the way that the game in America, not the game of football, but the game of any kind of sport is just the kind of main attraction in a bigger event. Whereas it still feels to me like football. If you go and watch a 0-0, that's it. There's no entertainment there. You've paid your money. Sorry. Stu, I know you've got thoughts on this. Have you got thoughts on this?
Variety is the spice of life. There's different ways to win games. I like the fact that someone tries to do something another way and then someone comes along and finds an antidote to that, and you have to work within your resources. So I'm never going to be one that's anti direct football or sniffy about dark arts and things like that, but there has to be a line. And I think the ball in play time now has got frankly ridiculous. I mean, the Birmingham game on the opening day, Derby, the way they saw that game out at Portman Road, when it's blatant, there's a line between kind of pushing the boundaries and cheating, and when it's kind of people like pushing the rules in terms of fake head injuries and it's souring the product, isn't it, ultimately? And we're getting less than a half of football in terms of actual ball in play time. I think some of the stats are showing that's not right. So I don't know quite what the solution is, whether it's, you know, the watch stopping, whether it's, you know, they've obviously trialled sticking ridiculous amounts of stoppage time on at the end of games and never really stuck with that. I don't know what the solution is, but it probably needs as a collective people to come together and have a chat about what the happy medium is, I'd say.
Okay, thanks, Ben, I suppose. Right, going to finish with two more questions. One I'm slightly uneasy about asking, but I'll ask because it's off Blue Sky, and I want more questions off Blue Sky. Sam Edwards on Blue Sky, and I'm going to ask you this, Ross. What's the largest animal each king thinks they could successfully duct tape to a lamppost? This immediately, being as a lover of animals, makes me feel slightly ill at ease. But what we're going to say is this animal understands that it's fun, it's a joke, it's play. Caveats, he says, lamppost is upright, animal is alive, you can't tame or bribe it. As an aside, one friend is adamant he could do a giraffe. Clearly a friend who's never actually seen a giraffe, Sam. No chance. Think I'd manage a sheep. Again, as someone who used to have sheep, I don't think you could, mate. They're surprisingly powerful. One to ask Greaves, which obviously would be where AJ comes in. But Ross, if you had to duct tape an animal to a lamppost in a fun way, in a sensitive, not harmful to the animal's psyche way, what would you reckon you could manage?
I definitely wouldn't do a giraffe because I love giraffes. I would never, I know it's,
well, you simply couldn't do a giraffe. It would kick you and it would kill you.
Basically.
Yeah.
Maybe a horse potentially.
What?
I know it can kick you as well, but I think horse were like, they, you know, I'm just gonna ride you. I'm about to do some, yeah, jumping over some stuff. So I don't know. I know they can kick you as well.
Horses can kill you as well with kicks. Yeah. I mean, that is their number one defense mechanism, is kicking you.
Yeah.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say I don't think you could duct tape a horse to a lamppost.
Yeah.
Unless it was a very friendly horse.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's the starter. Stu, what do you reckon you could duct tape to a lamppost?
Immediate thoughts are sheep, you're going to have an issue because you've got to think of the stickiness factor, haven't you? Duct tape is not going to stick to wool. That's just going to keep coming off.
You need to shave the sheep first. That would add time.
Exactly. I don't know. Some sort of aquatic animal, because they're going to be struggling out of water. I feel like we're moving into sort of animal cruelty.
Yeah, this is what makes me
terrain crazy. Here.
Yeah.
Give me some animals and I'll say yes or no.
A peacock.
They're quite feisty, aren't they? They can go for you if you ever go to like a country house and they sort of flare up, very pecky. Yep. Push comes to shove, yes, I could.
Swan.
Again, aggressive, aren't they? Can break your arm, as urban myth goes.
How can a swan break your arm? It's nonsense. When you objectively think about that, how does a swan break your arm? Anyway, can't. So you're saying no. So we need smaller animals, what you're saying. Guinea pig.
Yes.
It's like a guinea pig. Rabbit. And I realise this is uncomfortable because you have a rabbit.
I do. Yes.
Okay. I'm going to stop talking about this now. Because it's
I thought it was a big animal, though. I thought it had to be a big animal.
Any animal. I have
thought about this logically now, because you can't go too big with it, but you need to go with something that's not going to run or isn't going to try and take your hand off. And I've landed on the answer, a giant tortoise.
Yeah, I mean, you could probably... I've fed giant tortoises in Mauritius, and they don't move a lot.
Exactly.
You could probably just persuade it to stand next to
the, just literally the lift it up, put it there.
You couldn't lift it up, mate. Trust me, they're huge.
Oh, okay, well, let's get enough people to lift it up.
Just get it stand next to the lamppost and then just stick a little bit of... Although, of course,
we'll move the lamppost.
Their shells are very sensitive. So if you're sticking duct tape on, again, that's not something I'd like to do.
But
anyway.
Well, it's not something I'd like to do, but if I had to do it...
We've done the question. It's made me feel uneasy all the way through. Sam, we've answered your question. Final question, Rowan Gardner on Instagram. I'm going to come back to Ross on this. Someone who thinks he could duct tape a horse to a lamppost. Would you rather wrestle a crocodile or a gorilla?
I'm losing both battles. Gorilla, maybe. I think crocodile, they can bite you.
Have you gone absolutely mad?
Yeah. You can chat with it maybe a little bit, girl. You know, it's just a bit of fun, mate.
You can chat with a crocodile. You can reason with a crocodile. You can't with a gorilla.
No, because they're just, they straight away attack.
The answer clearly is crocodile for me. There's only one bit you have to be worried of, and that's the mouth. With a gorilla, if any part of the gorilla gets hold of you, you're going to be torn to shreds, literally ripped apart. Whereas a crocodile, if you can, we've seen Steve Irwin, not saying it's easy, but if you can approach it from behind, avoid the whipping tail and jump on its back, you've got half a chance. With a gorilla, there is no chance. One versus one, or indeed 10 versus gorilla, you're in all sorts of bother. So I'd say crocodile. Stu, as the seasoned, respected journalist you are, what would you say?
Yeah, crocodile for reasons already discussed. We recently had 100 men versus gorilla debate, and now Ross is saying he can do it mano-a-mano.
That's how I'm going to win, but it's just a
gorilla and the horse at the same time. Why not?
Yeah, he duct tape the horse to a lamppost. They go and punch up a gorilla. That's the way Ross would approach things. Anyway, shall we talk about football again now, friends?
Yeah.
It's all got a bit silly, hasn't it? very serious game, big game this weekend. The mighty Hollywood FC coming to Portman Road for the first ever league game between Ipswich Town and Wrexham. I believe they've played once before in the FA Cup, a game that Town lost back in the 90s. Wrexham clearly ascended through the leagues in a kind of fairy tale fashion. And they have narrative around this game. Clearly, Kiefer Moore and Nathan Broadhead potentially coming back to play against Town. AJ, how are you feeling about this game? Wrexham started pretty badly this season. They seem to have picked up, though.
Yeah, the thing with the alligator, with this, yeah, it's really... Oh, shut up, Ross. With it's bizarre having watched the Wrexham story. Have we all watched any of the Wrexham documentary? Hands up.
I watched and really enjoyed the first series. The second series onwards has been unfortunately dissolved into American saccharin nonsense.
Yeah, I like the first one. The thing is, as well, I have a lot of respect for Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney, to be fair, with the way they've done it, and they're not coming in as some sort of like Saudi oil company that will behead journalists or something like that. It's quite nice. So I think that's good. It's a pretty crazy story that in 2022-23, they were playing the likes of, let me just get this up, I think they had Dorking in the league, Maidenhead, Maidstone, Wealdstone, were all in the league. They went and won promotion in that season, and then they've just gone up and up and up to reach the Championship. They finished second in League Two, and they finished second in League One. I think that was the point where a lot of people thought they would plateau and struggle in League One, but they went up again, and they're in the Championship now. And it's a weird situation where, maybe almost in an Ipswich way, they've gone up with a squad that they've really had to try and chop and change as they go. So it's taken a lot of money, a lot of signings, some familiar faces, of course, as you mentioned, in Broadhead and Kiefer Moore, who is a doubt. And they've done okay, I think, to be honest. I know there was lots of hope of, can they make it four promotions? Can they go and get into the Premier League and do the whole straight run from the National League up to the Premier League? But I think they'd be happy to finish in mid-table, and that's where they are in 13th. They started a bit rubbish, lost their first couple of games at Southampton late on, then beaten by West Brom, but they kind of steadied it, went and won at Norwich, beat Millwall away from home, have a couple of home wins, three home wins under their belt, and beaten Oxford. The really good win against Coventry, which was on TV, and Kiefer Moore bullying Luke Wolfenden for 90 minutes, really. And they come into this one having beaten Charlton before the break. So they're probably more of the Wrexham that maybe we expected. And when you look through their squad, it's some good players in there, and a lot of real Championship experience as well that Town will need to be wary of. It's not just a promoted team that's kind of come up and has brought these players with them. You're looking at obviously Moore and Broadhead, Lewis O'Brien that we know quite well, Ben Sheaf, who was at Coventry for ages, Josh Windass, who's played against Ipswich a lot for Sheffield Wednesday. Plenty of firepower and star power in that group, and they're starting to click.
Yeah, well, you've mentioned there, AJ, that Kiefer Moore is a doubt with a hamstring injury, hamstring strain. I suspect that he probably will play, and he's going to be a handful, Stu. So when you look at what Ipswich Town might do in this game and who might play, we've obviously had the situation with the rotation between Greaves and Kiepre. Do you think the fact that Kiefer Moore is probably going to be battling them will influence McKenna's decision there?
Possibly, but it's not like Greaves and Kiepre are completely different types of players. It's not like you can say one is streets ahead in terms of physical attributes to deal with a big target man. Trying to think back now, it seems like a long time since Ipswich last played. Greaves came in, didn't he, for Kiepre last game and did well. So really hard one to call that, actually, in terms of which of those two comes in at centre-half. Last time out, Wrexham played sort of more lone striker with Broadhead just in behind. But prior to that, they've been playing with like a front two. It tends to be Moore and Windass up top with O'Brien just in behind. Maybe they'll look at some of Ipswich's Achilles heel this season, which has been kind of dealing with front twos at times, and look to revert to that. I don't know. But Greaves, just because he seems to be the man who's played last time out and played quite well, but hand on heart, I don't know which one of those two it will be.
Any other kind of selection poses or things you'd think in terms of the team that will play Saturday, Stu? I guess in theory, again, we're going to go into this incredibly busy period where we're going to see rotation. There's another game on Tuesday and then another game on Friday and so on and so on. So do you think that will influence the selection this Saturday, or do you just go for the best team you've got available Saturday?
No, I don't. I think that sort of thought process of the right players for the right games will come when we get into that three away game week for this weekend, fresh off of an international break. I think it will. I mean, for all the talk of rotation, the actual kind of weekend lineups, take away the midweekers, has actually started to become quite settled. It will be Walton in goal, Furlong, O'Shea, one of the two centre halves that we've just discussed, Davis, Matasiwa, Taylor, I think, in possession of that midfield shirt at the moment. Vale Agheli, as long as he comes back from Norway under 21s, fine. Big call between Philogene and Clark on the left, probably Philogene because of what he's been doing at Portman Road. Hurst, if he's not too hungover from his time away with the celebrations on Tuesday night, I think, that'll be him. Depends if he thinks that Hurst has been away. Azon might have had a really good international break and sort of done well and buoyed by his goal at Swansea. So maybe there's a discussion there, but I think it will be Hurst. And then the 10, Nunes, he's been away with Chile and Russia, hasn't he? I would imagine it will still be him. But Akpom again, has he put his hand up while others have been away over the break? I don't know. But that's my thoughts around the team off the top of my head.
I think there does have to be a little bit of a balancing act that comes into it. I think that Nunez is definitely one. Played the full 90 for Chile in Russia on Tuesday afternoon, evening-ish. Wouldn't have got back. It's a pretty long journey to do back from Russia. I'd imagine there's quite a few customs checks and things that come into that. And we know he's not a player that is going to boast incredible fitness. And you want him to be available within that three-game week coming in with Hull, Oxford and Blackburn. You'll need to get some good minutes in that one, given the fact that Chuba Akpom has trained, you'd imagine, if he's fit for the whole international break at Ipswich. That would be one that I'd look at. And in the same breath, and definitely Hurst and Azon's one, there's possibly more of a debate with the Kiusta-Taylor one than we would have seen. Taylor's obviously been away, played some minutes over the break. You've got a fresh Jens Kiusta who would have trained throughout this with Ipswich, preparing for this game and what's to come. There's part of me that was said, give Kiusta the game against Wrexham, then we've got ones coming up against Hull where the rotation's going to be crucial in that week with the away games, and Jens cannot start all of those along that line. Taylor will have more than enough opportunities to kind of show again that he's the one you should be starting week in, week out.
There's a fair point about Nunez. I didn't realise that game had been on Wednesday evening, so that's a tighter turnaround. Ireland's game was on Sunday, wasn't it? It's weekend to weekend. For me, it sends the wrong message with Taylor's. Has he started three of the last four and has probably been one of Ipswich's best players in all of those games? I think at the moment that sends a message to the rest of the group. It doesn't matter who you are. If you come in and you play well, you keep your place. So I'd be disappointed if Taylor didn't start this one. I know Jens came on and did well in the latter stages against Swansea, but Jack Taylor must be feeling 10 feet tall at the moment. He's playing well for club and country. I think you have to try and ride that. For me.
Okay, right. We're approaching almost a full 90 minutes of pod, which frankly is far too long. And I apologise for keeping you for so long. So let's do predictions. Ross, have we got the prediction leaderboard to hand?
No.
Oh, good.
I can bring it up when we've done the prediction. So.
Okay, good. Well, good. Who's top? Just remind me, is it Stu?
I think it's me and Stu joint.
You and Stu. I can't remember who's bottom. But that's probably not really that important because it's just for fun, isn't it? Doesn't really matter. Ross, you give us your prediction then to start off with.
I'm going to go for another Town win, and it's going to be 2-0. Clean sheet, please, boys.
2-0. First scorer?
First goal scorer is going to be Jaden Philogene because he loves scoring at Portman
Road. He loves Portman Road. Stewie?
2-1 to Ipswich.
First scorer?
What did you just say, Ross? Philogene? I'm going to... Do I play the law of averages and think about who's going to start? I'm going to say Sindre Vala-Egeli will get his first Ipswich Town goal.
He's going to get it soon, isn't he? He's going to get it soon. Let's hope it's Saturday. AJ?
Yeah, I'm going to go 2-1 as well. 2-1 Ipswich win. I can't deviate from it. I'm going to go with a different goal scorer, though. And I'm going to say Chuba Akpom. Get him in that number 10 role.
I'm going to say, and again, I can't really remember who's bottom of the table. Doesn't really matter, though. That can't be right. 3-1 Town. I am going to say George Hurst, who, as Stu says, will hopefully recover from his hangover and be bang up for proving himself getting to the World Cup by scoring against Wrexham, owned by the Hollywood icons, of course. So I'm saying 3-1 Town. We're all going wins then. The boys will be at the presser tomorrow, and then obviously the game Saturday. If you can't be there, follow it with them. Just a few other things to mention before we take our leave today. Competition. If you're a subscriber, we have literally a money can't buy competition that's just launched. I'll share the links on our social medias. You friends can enter a competition to win us. These boys, not specifically just us generally, to attend an Ipswich Town game with us. You can come with us on the Saturday, January 31st, I think it is, Preston at home. So looking for to revenge the away defeat. One lucky winner will join us for that game in the press box. Pre-match, get some scran, maybe do some ratings with Ross. Certainly be on game day with Ross when we get the team news. Watch the game with us in the press box and then go and attend the press conferences post-match as well. You can see what the boys do on a match day. So that is a prize we've never offered before, literally a prize that money can't buy. So there's an opportunity if you are a subscriber to enter that. And if you're not a subscriber, you can just subscribe and enter. And funnily enough, we've got a great offer on at the moment, our end of year offer, £6 for 6 months. So if you sign up now, it'll take you all the way to the end of this season. So just £1 a month. Or if you sign up now for the year offer, it's £26 until the end of 2026. So if you sign up now, not only do you get the whole of next year, you also get the rest of November and December thrown in. So 14 months for £26. Again, links all over our social medias. We should also mention, of course, a month today, KOA Live 3 at the Baths in Ipswich. Tickets still available. Again, we'll share links after this. Just confirmed that the finale will be Ross trying to duct tape a horse to a lamppost and then wrestle a gorilla as you all go home. So that is reason alone to buy a ticket, just £10 to see that. Ross die in horrendous fashion at KOA Live 3. Let's hope none of us die literally on stage that night, clam up, as they say in the business. Friends, anything else to mention?
No other business.
Stu can't wait to leave this podcast. He's looked bored and irritable for the last half an hour. So I'm going to wrap it up for him. We haven't had time, of course, to mention Fabio Wardley becoming Suffolk's first ever world champion, which seems a bit of a shame. But we don't really have time. So we'll return to that maybe in future. Friends, make sure you get your tickets. Reminder to support our sponsors. Use the code KOA at stardustspirits.co.uk for 20% off all their excellent alcoholic beverages. We're hoping to have Stardust with us on the night at KOA Live. Maybe a little sales samples table. I still need to check where we stand with the licensing laws on that at the venue. But hopefully he'll be with us, Gary, and the team from Stardust. And also, obviously, KOA10 at molecular-uk.com. It's .com, isn't it? Yeah, uk.com. Just check that. For 10% off all the excellent stuff they have there, all their excellent car cleaning and various other bits that they do. Leiston based company, excellent to have two Suffolk companies on board. So please support them if you can. I think that brings us to an end of what is a fairly epic podcast. We've gone from the sublime to the ridiculous in this podcast. Some serious footy chat and Ross wrestling gorilla, which is the sort of thing you can only really get on KOA. So have a great weekend, friends. If you are going to the game, enjoy it. If you're not, follow it all with the boys, and we'll be back on Monday to break it all down. Have a good one.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.